Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 645, Catching Up with John Loftus. This program is being recorded on August 17th of the year 2008. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves an individual whom I consider to be a genuine American hero, author, and researcher, John Loftus. John, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's always fun to be on this network, and good talking with you again. Glad we've talked a few times over the years, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. And beyond that, more than one step beyond, that was the title of an old talk show that I did for many years. The audience has been familiar with your work going back to the very early 1980s. I know I was doing programs where I was reading about people like Reinhard Gehlen and talking to folks. These were the early Reagan years, about how some of the worst Nazis were brought into the United States to work for the defense industry and work for the intelligence community. And people were treating me like I just stepped off of a UFO. They were not pleased.
And then, it's nice to be justified by history, isn't it, to have all this stuff now?
Well, it is. And as things were gaining momentum, so to speak, there was, in rapid order, rapid succession, I should say, there was your 60 Minutes broadcast, which is about as mainstream as things can get. And then you came out with the Belarus Secret around the same time Klaus Barbie got arrested, and it turned out that his largesse here in the New World was due largely to his work for U.S. intelligence, and then they busted the Fiancés of Death and the whole P2 crowd in 82, and we were off to the races. So, yes, you've not only made many appearances here over the years, but the audience has been familiar with your work for more than a quarter of a century.
Well, you know what's nice is there was some right-wing neocon who wrote a book called Saboteur. Real nice guy, I guess, like Ken Timmerman. And he called me the pugnacious John Loftus, who attacks both Republicans and Democrats equally. And I think I always liked that compliment, because the history does not belong to the GOP. It doesn't belong to the Democrats. It belongs to us. And we journalists need to fight for it to make sure that, you know, that we tell both sides of the story, of course, but that we concentrate on what's true, what's real about history. And let's not sell out and accept the conventional wisdom. And so I have offended from time to time some of my friends on the left and some of my friends on the right. But everyone seems to respect my desire to get the right story out.
Exactly.
So I'm happy with that. I'm content.
Well, that's why and knowing not only how hard you've worked, but some of the flack you've endured, it's why I refer to you as a genuine American hero. And I'm a tough SOB.
I feel like a catcher for a dart team sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's that old Turkish expression that I cite so often. He who tells the truth gets chased out of nine villages, and you've had more than a few people chasing after you.
The worst thing I ever did was, you know, for 30 years now, I've been a lawyer for people who are whistleblowers in the U.S. government and other governments. And once a year, we have a convention. It's called the Intelligence Summit. Hey, Dave, you have to come. IntelligenceSummit.org is the website.
Okay.
And every year I get together the top intelligence leaders of 35 different democratic countries. And we sit down informally. This year it's going to be October 22nd and 23rd at the old Willard Hotel. It's down. It's called the Marriott in Washington, D.C. It's just right next to the White House. And we're going to have the top people from U.S. intel, British intel, Indian, Israeli. Last year at KGB generals, you name it, they'll come. The topic of this year's conference is the progress or lack of progress of Iran making nuclear weapons. Is it true? Is it hype? Is it real or not? So we're going to – Senator McCain has already said he'll come. We're trying to get Senator Obama to confirm. This will be a week after the last debate and a week before the election. So it could be a great time. We're going to have some of the top people from the Israeli election service coming as well, because they're directly involved with whatever happens in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just cut through it all. Let's just find out what's going on.
Well,
it's a great time, October 22nd, 23rd. Go to intelligencesummit.org. But you have to follow the rules. We use Chatham House rules. You can never quote who said something or what agency they were from, but you can quote what was said. But this is the only time in your life where you get to sit down and rub shoulders with someone from CIA, British intelligence, Israeli intelligence, Russian intelligence, and everybody comes together for Wednesday and Thursday, and it's hilarious, good fun. The best part, of course, is what happens in the hallways. But as long as you're polite and respectful, you will never again have a chance to meet with such high-level people.
Wow.
We really want the press and the public to attend, because these guys in their ivory towers never hear from us.
Well, this would be quite an opportunity. Now, the problem, of course, is one of money, because I'd have to, not only the travel expenses and so forth, but also I'd have to be...
Yeah, I wish we had money this year for scholarships, but we don't.
I know.
I managed to tick off the Bush administration.
Oh, I can't imagine
that. Hell surprise, yeah. Well, I pointed out that the National Director of Intelligence had neglected to translate any of the captured Saddam documents. And this was kind of interesting because it turns out that both the left and the right was wrong. There really was this nasty muddle where Saddam was breaking his neck to get more WMD. Whether he had it inside Iraq on the day it happened is a gray area, but boy... anyway, the documents are just hilariously absurd, as are, and the same guy in charge of that, John Negroponte, was demoted after we had our conference, and was angry at me. And now these nitwits at state, run by Negroponte, by the way, he was Deputy Secretary of State in charge of intelligence, they're recruiting an organization called the Muslim Brotherhood. And Dave, you and I have covered the Muslim Brotherhood from A to Z.
So that once again, the Muslim Brotherhood are being viewed as good guys by the elements of the Bush administration.
Man, can I pick enemies or what? You know, bad enough I pointed out the president's grandfather and great-grandfather funded Hitler. Oops, you know. But you know what, you can't blame this president for that. Anyone you can blame Jack Kennedy because his dad bought Nazi stocks.
Sure.
But very few people know that Joe Kennedy bought his Nazi stocks from Prescott Bush. They traveled to Europe together in a ship before the war, and Prescott introduced them to all the right people. Or wrong people, depending on your point of view.
So Negroponte, now you made a reference. The last time we spoke, which actually was on Veterans Day last year, Veterans Day weekend, you mentioned that after the dust settled, quite literally, in Iraq, it turned after first the Bush administration and Condi Rice was talking about the smoking gun and the mushroom cloud, et cetera, then the invasion took place, and then there were no WMDs. However, there were some documents that were translated that the Bush administration did not discuss, but you came across. And would you review that so we can place this in the context?
Sure, it's a controversial subject, but basically everybody was a little bit right about the WMD in Iraq. Everybody was a little bit wrong. Saddam did destroy a quarter of his WMD under pressure from the UN. They succeeded. Another quarter, though, he sold to his Arab buddies, including the Iranians,
mm-hmm.
his former enemies. Another quarter, the Russians came in the last couple of months before the war, and they literally took out of his hands and dragged them across the border to Syria and buried them in Syria. But there was another quarter still there, because Saddam didn't get that stuff from the Russians. He got it from the Chinese, and that was material to be used for enrichment of yellow cake, of basic uranium ore. Saddam had a huge nuclear weapons program going up in the 10 months before the war, and we have all his own audio tapes of these private meetings. They were never translated. These nitwits of the Bush administration. There were four sites, underground factories built under the Euphrates, that were actually found. Guys that went there got radiation exposure, and their reports were, quote, lost. And when this was discovered 3 years later, every one of the sites had been looted. So if you thought that the Bush management of the Katrina disaster in New Orleans was bad, this makes that look like a grand success.
Right.
There actually were predecessor elements for nuclear weapons programs, major scientific advances, expensive equipment, and all of it was left unguarded, kind of like dopes of the year.
John, before you discussed this on our airwaves last, you also published an article about it, I had heard military scuttlebutt about exactly the same thing through channels that they were talking about basically WMD storage areas in these huge underground caverns built beneath the Euphrates River. You might want to tell what this term scuttlebutt probably is not well known to members of our audience. And as a former military officer, why don't you define that for us?
Well, scuttlebutt is the scuttle, of course, was the on the naval ships where the I don't make sure we violate our FAA and FCC licensure stuff, but it was the place where the seamen would gather to spread gossip while conducting bodily functions.
Alrighty.
Okay, it was the bowsprit of the ship, essentially, where the netting was. It was the open urinal the ships used. and that was the, well, anyway.
It means military BS, basically, not necessarily
military
false.
Military BS, yeah, yep. That's a good way to put it.
But
know?
But not necessarily false, just, you know, conversation,
no.
you know, gossip.
The funny thing was, here was information that was potentially helpful to the Bush administration, and Negroponte and the State Department killed it because it made their bureaucrats look bad.
So that actually anticipates my next question. If in fact, assuming these documents are accurate, and I have no reason to cast aspersions, why hasn't the Bush administration made noise about this? It would seem.
Well, they did do one thing. They fired Negroponte from Director of National Intelligence and demoted him back to the State Department. So the Washington gossip is Negroponte blames me. Gee, just because I pointed out a couple of areas where we screwed up majorly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't the guy have a sense of humor?
Well, I guess
people have a right to know the truth. And when the Republicans screw up or the Democrats screw up, I try and find it out. I mean, that's what my friends in the intelligence community trust me to do, to sift the wheat from the chaff. And, you know, the truth is a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, people think there's some grand conspiracy out there. Usually it's 90% stupidity and 10% conspiracy.
I think an awful lot of it, too, in my experience, has been inertia. Once a bureaucrat and once a bureaucracy gets rolling in a direction, changing direction is difficult, and inertia itself has a lot to do with it.
Dave, you put your finger on, what is our department's position? Well, once that position is taken, you know, your career depends on upholding, you know, the status quo.
Yep. Yep, it really has a lot to do with it, I think. Negroponte, now, you mentioned that he was dismissed. Basically, when it came out that he had failed to unearth intelligence that was right in front of his nose about existing Iraqi WMDs, then he was dismissed because of that, and then he's now blaming you.
That's the gossip, yeah. And he probably has some justification to it, so a man is known by his enemies. I wouldn't be upset to have John Negroponte reported as one of my enemies. So.
Yeah, well, a man can take pride in his enemies to a certain extent, I guess.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I think getting rid of that jerk was a major improvement in U.S. foreign policy.
John Negroponte, you mentioned that he is now Negroponte and associates, I guess one could say, are cuddling up to the Muslim Brotherhood. I'd like to talk about a Debka Net Weekly article that you cited in your article about the Iraqi nukes. But very quickly, I know the State Department has been considering cuddling up to the Muslim Brotherhood. What are Negroponte and company doing with the Brotherhood?
They actually funded some studies that rehab the reputation of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the short encapsulated version is that the Muslim Brotherhood was a Nazi propaganda organization in the Arab world. It was the Arab Nazi movement, in essence. They worked for British intelligence after World War II, and then to the predecessor of the CIA, then the CIA, then the Saudis. So the Arab Nazi movement is still alive under the guise of the Muslim Brotherhood, and our State Department wants to hire them back. It is the dumbest idea ever heard. And I tell my conservative friends that they should absolutely get rid of the Muslim Brotherhood because this was an organization that was sold to the U.S. government by Kim Philby, the top-ranking communist spy in the British Secret Service. And indeed, even the right-wing groups in Germany, the pro-Nazi organizations today, admit that the number two guy in the organization was a long-term communist spy. The communists in Egypt used to tell all the young recruits to come in, don't join the Communist Party, please go join the Muslim Brotherhood and become a mullah. And now these nitwits in the State Department want to revive the Muslim Brotherhood because they think they can use them as a proxy army to fight the Shiite elements in Iraq and Iran. It is the dumbest idea anyone has heard. I think what's happened over the years is that our State Department has been kidnapped by the Arabs. I mean, if you speak Arabic, you can serve in 22 countries. If you speak Israeli, you can speak and get posted to one country.
Wow.
Even Bandar Bush, mm-hmm. the former Saudi ambassador to the U.S., bragged that our State Department is so loyal to the Saudis because they know that when they retire, the Saudi government will take care of them. You see, it's not bribery, David. If you give them the money the day after they leave government service.
The guy
writes a book, the Saudis buy 200,000 copies. If he goes to teach at a university, the Saudis endow his chair, and on and on and on. It is the most insidious financial corruption in American history. The Saudis have discovered that you can't buy the U.S. government, but you can rent our State Department.
They've also discovered that you can buy a fair amount of American academia, too, because they certainly have been doing that.
I hate to get my friends on the left angry at me again, but yeah. There have been, when you endow a chair, supposedly the university does not grant naming opportunities for the professor to be appointed. Sadly, some of our best universities have flouted that rule. And the Saudis have ended up taking over the Middle Eastern Studies departments at, you know, hard to say, 10, 20, 30 American universities. And a whole generation of academics are growing up being trained by Saudi propagandists. Now, I have nothing against the Saudis, per se. It's just that the Saudis have an Islamic heresy. Islam's a nice religion, but the heresy that's the legal reason in Saudi Arabia is called Wahhabism. It's an ultra-right cult. The Saudis were extremely pro-Nazi. Wahhabism is like the sort of the merger between the Nazi racism and the Wahhabist bigotry. It is an obscene contradiction of everything that's good about Islam. And with the oil money the Saudis had, they have propagated this obscene heresy around the world. To this day, a lot of people in U.S. intelligence think that the Saudi version, Wahhabism or Salafism, as it's sometimes called, that that's the real Islam. And it's not. It's a tiny, this is a heresy that's despised by most of the Islamic world. But they're afraid to speak out, or they're too poor to speak out. Too poor is most often the answer. The Saudis hold the mortgages on 80% of the mosques in the U.S. Do you really think they're going to stand up and criticize the Saudis?
Nope. Money definitely talks, and big money filibusters, I guess one could say.
I think the worst thing about the Bush family were their ties with the House of Saud. And even this president, who's basically just a genial frat boy, I mean, let's face it, he's not the sharpest tool in the shed. I think he probably has a good heart, he means well, but he's just flailingly incompetent. But he trusts a lot of what his friends, and he literally calls Bandar Bush. He treats him as a member of the family. Mm-hmm. How horrible. How can we have a president who's that stupid? I've openly endorsed Obama on my radio show. I think McCain is probably qualified to be president, despite that he's crashed his airplane 5 times and was in the bottom 2% in his class of a second-rate engineering school, West Point. But either man meets the minimum threshold for the presidency. But my God, what I like about Obama is that no one owns him. The harsh reality is that McCain, like every other presidential candidate, gets a lot of his money from the pharmaceutical lobbies and from the oil companies and from all the big business. Now, Obama gets, you know, for a while there, his average donor was around $40. Now it's up to about $90. This is a historic change in American political fundraising. This is a guy that nobody owns. Everybody's kicking in little nickel and dime money. Now, the GOP is fighting back, saying, oh, my God, the Obama is lying to people, telling them, you know, you elect me, I will give you, you'll be the ultimate welfare queens, the usual canards. It's not working. Obama is just too intelligent a guy. Now, I'm told that the worst of the smears are going to come right after Obama is nominated the convention. They've stolen Michelle Obama's undergraduate thesis where she said some stupid things. They have a bunch of Obama's so-called youthful associates that will embarrass him the way Reverend Wright did. These guys want their moment in the sun, and they're perfectly willing to throw Obama under the bus to advance their own flame. So the black community is going to have a small element turning on Obama with Republican money. Okay?
We'll talk about some of the things that are going to be done. Because one of the things that I really wanted to stress, too, you were talking about the Muslim Brotherhood, and probably we'll get into it in more greater depth in the second half of the program. But the Muslim Brotherhood is, of course, in addition to being an Arab fascist organization, it's the parent organization of not only the Afghan Mujahideen, but Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and yet stemming largely from the lawsuit that you filed against Sami Al-Arian, and then the Operation Green Quest raids of March of 2002, it has presented a vista on a profound relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Bush administration and the GOP, and at least some of those elements are involved with it. You know, like the, remember the, there was this headscarf incident with Obama on where a couple of Muslim women with headscarves showed up on stage, and then I guess an Obama aide asked them if they would please get off camera.
Get off camera range, yeah.
Well, that whole thing was set up by members of the Muslim Student Association at University of Michigan Dearborn. That is a Muslim Brotherhood outgrowth, basically.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, we're not talking about neo-Nazis. We're talking about Nazis, and the second-generation Nazis are what we call terrorism. I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood is the parent organization of all, literally all, the Sunni-based terrorist organizations in the world. And the irony is that they're doing training for the FBI under the guise of CARE, the Congress of American Islamic Relations, which passes itself off as a liberal group, but really isn't. The Muslim Brotherhood is an absolute anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-Semitic, anti-just about everybody group. It is literally the last World War II Nazi group to survive intact. And I don't like the term Islamofascism, but, I mean, the guy that founded the Muslim Brotherhood was best friends with Adolf Hitler.
That was Hassan al-Banna. Hassan al-Banna, and then the Grand Mufti.
Yeah, and the Grand Mufti was a despicable little man who actually went to Auschwitz to cheer on the guards in the massacre of the Jews. He was one of the few people in the world that Adolf Hitler personally briefed that the secret plan of World War II was to exterminate all the Jews of Europe. And one of Hitler's aides said, it was, my God, mein Führer, why would you tell such a secret to an Arab? He says, because they understand our point of view so completely. So that's what the kind of people that are in the Muslim Brotherhood. In the Cold War, the idea was that the Muslim Brotherhood would be a spy agency to get the Muslims of the underbelly of the Soviet Union to splinter away and cause a revolution against Bolshevism. And, of course, that idea was thought up by Kim Philby, the genius Soviet double agent who portrayed the Muslim Brotherhood as freedom fighters against communism, the same way he sold all the Eastern European Nazis to the gullible U.S. as freedom fighters against communism. So the State Department is the custodian of all these decades of lies upon lies. They don't know how to sort it out without embarrassing themselves and their bosses. So they've decided to continue it, to pretend that the Muslim Brotherhood are the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just asinine. The latest blow-up, of course, was when a book, an apologia for the Grand Mufti, was just appeared in the bookstore of the Holocaust Museum.
It basically said,
a bad guy.
You said
the Holocaust Museum was forced to apologize and take the book off their shelves.
This was portraying the Grand Mufti, who, among other things, founded three Balkan Muslim Waffen SS divisions, and was portraying him as an advocate of nonviolence.
Oh, just what nonsense. I mean, was it Orwell said that the greatest form of lie is the omission, and is the duty of historians to ensure that those lies don't creep into the history books. Well, the Muslim Brotherhood is the greatest omission, the most underreported story, since 1928. Here is the Arab Nazi movement that has never been exposed, never been criticized. And believe me, I am a staunch supporter of the right of majority Islam to be free. It's a very tolerant, peaceful faith. It's much misunderstood in the West. It is the kind and decent people. And please remember that 85% of all the world's Muslims aren't even Arabs. And of the 15% that are Arabs, only 1% can be called Wahhabis or Salafis. They belong to this extremist, what I would call a heretical cult. Now, last year, our intelligence summit, we sponsored a secular Islamic summit as well. We invited all the secular Islamic leaders, whether they were lesbian Muslim women, Ishtad Hanji of Canada, and Muslim leaders from around the world, to stand up and say, this is not what being a Muslim is about. These fanatics are heretics. This is not, they have stolen the name of our religion, but they cannot steal our religion. I thought it was great.
We got about another 5 minutes or so on this side, John. Let's try to fit a couple of things in here. First of all, let's discuss a recent book that you've published, The Witness Tree.
Oh, it's a great little book. It's my first historical novel. Usually I write these very, very dry but well-documented history books of intelligence operations, what my dad calls some of the best sleeping pills ever written. But my friend Brendan Howley up in Canada said, look, just for once, let's try doing a historical novel where to engage the next generation of kids that don't know history, wouldn't read a history book. So the story is factual, but the dialogue is fictional. It was like Schindler's List. Great little story, but the dialogue was made up. And but the story was absolutely accurate. What we did was to write a story about the Dulles family through the eyes of their younger sister. Now, Eleanor Dulles was the youngest Dulles, and she was a lovely young woman. And in the 1930s, she married a Jewish guy. This horrified her conservative family. Her husband commits suicide under very mysterious circumstances. And that's when Eleanor discovers that her brothers are Hitler's bankers. Eleanor became the spy for the Zionists to get the blackmail information to blackmail some of her brother's clients, particularly Nelson Rockefeller. And it was Rockefeller who, in 3 days, turned around all the votes in the UN. They barely got enough votes to create the State of Israel. And it was Eleanor Dulles who did that. True story, never been told before. It's a very engaging historical novel, but it's fiction based on fact. So the book right now is only out in Canada. It was considered too controversial for the U.S. during election year because it talks about the Bush family and how they got their money, and the Dulles family and the Harrimans. It's no pulling any punches.
George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush Sr., of course, being among Alan Dulles' main clients and investors in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, Prescott Bush was the manager of a number of the Nazi fund companies in the U.S. His father-in-law, Herbert Walker, had all the money, and his drunkard son-in-law, Prescott, was the scapegoat, if you will. He put him on the boards of these banks.
John, you have a film coming out about that. We're almost out of time on this side. You have a film coming out about the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, we hope it's more than that. It should be out in January at the Sundance Film Festival. Look for a film called American Secrets, because it's about these American corporations that are involved with Hitler, involved with the Muslim Brotherhood, and have quietly been backing the groups that we know as Al-Qaeda today.
These are Americans backing these groups.
Yeah, American corporations. Because you shouldn't call a multinational corporation American corporation, because oil companies will sell us out in a heartbeat. They are happy to bring the American public to their knees, quadrupling oil prices just to make a profit. That's what they're about. They're about hurting America. They're not American corporations. They're with the enemy.
And indeed. Very quickly, before we wrap up, intelligencesummit.org. Tell us about when the Intelligence Summit is going to be convened this fall.
October 22nd and 23rd. It's Wednesday and Thursday, which Senator McCain is coming. We're trying to get him as the keynote speaker Wednesday night, and Senator Obama on Thursday night. You're going to see some of the top politicians contending for the prime minister election in Israel. But you're going to, mostly it's about meeting people from the intelligence agencies around the world. The best endorsement of the Intelligence Summit is that Negroponte and the State Department have tried repeatedly to shut it down. But we're still here. There's still a group of us left in the world that think the truth is worth telling, and we invite any member of the public, any member of the press to come and join us. And we usually keep the prices low. It's about $299 for the summit. You can stay at the hotel where it's at if you want. We can do a good rate on that, or stay with some friends in D.C. But you shouldn't miss it. It is your once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to rub shoulders with the former head of CIA or British intelligence or Israeli intelligence. And the insights we offer, you know, often as much as 100 classes into different aspects of foreign affairs, international policy, intelligence policy. It's the only place in the world where this happens. And, you know, you should come. It's quite an education.
Definitely. This concludes Side 1 For the Record, program number 645. Catching up with John Loftus. This is being recorded on August 17th of 2008. For John Loftus, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.